Hi, Monica Pearson. Welcome to KABU here in Portland.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Monica Pearson is on staff as an organizer for Oregon's Rural Organizing Project. She lives in Astoria. She's responsible for organizing along the whole coast and the, in fact, southern border all the way east on top California. The Rural Organizing Project has 82 member organizations, probably a few more recently, none in Multnomah County, but lots of organizations fighting for the interest of mostly low-income people across the rest of the state, attempting to build power behind progressive struggles. Today, we'll be discussing how the Rural Organizing Project, how it works with those 82 organizations, and we'll also discuss what rural people, how it is to organize them, what they believe and why so many resist, for example, vaccination, and many regard masking as a badge of slavery, but surely not all, and surely Bundys have very few followers, actually, and many, many have nothing to do with that radical, relatively violent conservatism, but also they're deeply suspicious of government and blame environmentalists for loss of jobs in mills and the woods. Still, they can be talked to and won over. Monica Pearson, tell us about the Rural Organizing Project and how you operate.
We work closest with just individual member groups. So all of our groups in the network are autonomous. And there are moments that our groups will come together, like behind a certain movement. We had a big win last year. We were part of a coalition of member groups and other organizations that came together to like overturn the ICE contract at Norcor. So that was a big win for us last year. When you're talking about working with tribal governments, what we really try to do is just amplify the things that the tribes are already saying. Over the summer, there were some things happening in Klamath Falls. Eamon Bundy's group set up a tent in Klamath Falls, like right near a water shutoff valve. The ranchers and the tribe there were having discussions. It's been an ongoing thing, but just about who has rights to the water there. And Eamon Bundy's group set up a tent right near the water shutoff valve. So people were poised thinking like they were going to turn on the water to go to the ranchers. But what Rural Organizing Project does is we just want to amplify what the tribe itself is already saying. We don't want to speak for the tribes. We just amplified what they were saying. And that's what our groups that we work with have done as well. Like I visited Klamath Falls over the summer and met with some of our member groups, and they were all just following what the tribe was saying. They were trying to not give attention to, you know, these outsiders essentially that were coming in and saying that they knew what was best for the folks in Klamath Falls. Like the folks in Klamath Falls, they're the ones that know what's best for them. And we've done the same thing with other tribal governments. There's the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla. Their leadership council has been working on trying to remove dams along the Snake River. So we've tried to amplify that. And then there's other Klamath tribal organizers that are working with trying to stop, you know, considering dams to be clean energy projects. So those are things that, I mean, we're not part of the decision making. We weren't the ones coming up with the plans. We just were supporting those tribal organizers in their efforts and trying to just amplify what they were saying.
Right. I think, though, you're being a little too modest. If I've read your materials, because you've gathered these groups together to build a program for the development of rural areas, and particularly the concerns of very low-income people in rural areas who are very poorly served, not just by the state. In fact, the state probably serves them better than the corporate apparatus in this country, who not only move out their groceries from poor areas and cities, but they don't want to serve. There's just too little people there and too little money. So you don't get broadband. You don't get all sorts of stuff that's very important from the private sector. Tell us about how you're unifying all of these separate voices and separate people.
So the biggest strength with rural organizing project really are the relationships that we have with our member groups all around the state. We've been around for 30 years, so these relationships are not new. We have some folks that we organize with now that we organized with their parents, and they remember being a kid at a rally, for example. But through conversations and strategy sessions and town hall meetings, or we call them kitchen table conversations, just make them more personal, or living room conversations, we gathered, you know, what's important to folks all around Oregon? What are they missing living in a rural area? And we came up with our roadmap to a thriving rural Oregon. And it's broken down into like four categories. The overarching categories are, you know, we're all essential. And what that encompasses is like free childcare for all, safe housing, safe schools, safe workplaces, healthy and accessible learning environments. Another category is healthy people make healthy communities. So, you know, right now at this time, it's COVID testing and tracing treatment sites and making sure that's accessible in rural communities. Healthcare for everyone, sustainable local food production, healthy food, clean water. Another category is safe and welcoming communities. And that includes affordable housing and utilities, inclusive democracy, rent or mortgage forgiveness, like during COVID. That also includes the ending of detention and deportation and providing permanent protection and dignity for immigrants and safety from state violence. And then our last category is connecting our voices, which includes publicly funded community media. You mentioned broadband. Broadband internet is huge. It's a huge miss in rural communities, but it really is not accessible. Celebrating rural Oregon's mosaic of experiences, and then fully funding the United States Post Office. Then our roadmap, what we use this for is we have more conversations. Like if there's a new group that we're organizing with, we'll sit down and kind of show the roadmap and like what is missing in your community? Because this is just a broad stroke for the whole state. You know, there are communities that have figured out some broadband local resources or mesh systems. We've seen that popping up in different communities. Like right now, Tillamook County, the county commissioners there are trying to work on broadband there. So we've seen that popping up in certain communities, but like what's missing in your community? And then from there, we help the groups figure out what's your plan of action? What are things you want to be fighting for? What's really needed in your community? So, and that's where we try to bring other groups together. Like when we're working countywide, if there's a larger thing that we need more voices, you know, we will try to mobilize our groups. And we've done that in moments for the whole state as well. But that's how we bring people together, really, is around our roadmap and helping groups understand that the power that they do have, there really is power in speaking up. And in rural communities, you know everybody. You either grew up in the area, or even if you moved in fairly recently, you quickly network with folks. And it's amazing, like when you realize your own power and people that you know in certain places that might know somebody's brother or somebody's cousin. So like, we don't take any of that for granted. And we help groups and individuals understand the power and the connections that they have in their community and how they can advance their community and themselves.
Yeah, you also, as far as I can tell, are working to not just help people communicate through broadband. Of course, broadband gives you the internet and much more access to what's happening in the world and the organizations. But you also are trying to set, I mean, working with people who are trying to set up little newspapers. I think there's a, you have a statewide radio show or podcast, at least. It seems to me that what you're doing is creating, helping to create this the recognition in rural Oregon that they have common problems and that they can be solved, and the nature of the problems and the nature of solutions.
You actually mentioned earlier about, you know, why people are anti-mask and anti-vax and like that. And what Rural Organizing Project tries to do is help break isolation. Like, I mean, I'm not an expert on why people are anti-mask or anti-vax, but when you talk to people in rural communities, they really do feel isolated. They feel like they were left behind, and they're kind of in a void of news. There's probably not a radio station local, like, or if there is, you know, it might just be playing oldies or something. It's not necessarily a news outlet. The news they get is piped in from Portland, like that's their local news, even though that's not local to them. I mean, I have some groups down in Coos County and farther down the coast that, like, their news is coming from California. Like, they don't have any news outlets at all. So ROP has worked really hard trying to help break that isolation. And through trying to, like, we do have a podcast that is broadcast on a lot of community radio stations. You can also listen to it online. It's called Rural Roots Rising. And then we also spend a lot of time as organizers when we go into communities. If there is a local paper, we talk to the folks there at the local paper and try to strategize. Like, a lot of our groups might have a column and a little, it could be a little arts paper, but it's something. It's something like community-based that is getting information out to folks. Like, we've noticed it is a void of news that people are getting, you know, and unfortunately then when there aren't other sources, people turn to Fox News or what other random other podcasts that they might find online. So we do try to focus as much on that. And that's why broadband has bubbled up really as such an important issue, is because it does impede people's ability to get news. And we also focus on post offices. Why do you worry about post offices? But that's people's livelihood as well. Like, farmers, they get seeds that way. People get their medication. And some people don't have vehicles to drive 40 miles to the next post office. And a lot of times post offices end up being similar to what libraries are. They're kind of the lifeblood of the community. It's a place that neighbors go and they'll see their friends or they'll see other folks that they haven't seen in a while. So really, like, the breaking isolation has always been a focus for a rural organizing project.
This is Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Radio, talking to Monica Pearson of the Rural Organizing Project, who have made progress in all these years. We've been talking about their effort to help projects, to amplify their voices, as well as to help people in rural Oregon, the progressive movements. Oregon is full of them, and the Rural Organizing Project has 82 members, and that's been growing recently. They've made progress in all these years, but it seems to me that, for example, now it's a rare rural area where over 50% of the residents are vaccinated. Many are hostile to masks. So rise in Maine populism is real, and Trump has really jump-started Trumpism has had an enormous effect on bringing people together around a hideous program, and his hostility to liberal elites and to progressives, and in fact to all elites, and his fake populism, it's very appealing, I'm afraid. What's your sense of how Trumpism, about how that right-wing thrust can be blunted, and how a progressive movement can perhaps arise in rural areas, at least contend in rural areas?
I mean, really the way that we talk about changing things or combating it, or I don't know what the right word is, but it's really just having conversations and putting faces and real stories to rural folks and what is happening. Like, for example, we try to highlight immigrant stories. You know, you mentioned like sheriffs collaborating with ICE, and we've seen that in several counties. It was happening in the county I live in Clatsop County, until we got a new sheriff. But we talk to groups, and groups will sit down with the sheriffs and ask them questions. It's about having conversations with your neighbors. And if you talk about, like, immigrants that live in the community and struggles that they have and put a human face to it, it does help break down some of the barriers. I mean, obviously, there are people that are, you know, really extremist that's not going to work with. But in general, that is really the best way that we have found, is to just make it as human as possible.
By talking about real stories, it seems to me, and real people, it puts a whole different face on this right-wing rhetoric about, blacks and about immigrants taking their jobs and getting better health care than they have, and their fears of the city and of black people bankrupting the federal government by demands for welfare and welfare queens. That whole rhetoric has been fairly useful for the right, and clearly one way of dealing with it is through these conversations of what's happening to real people and the real need to give up this fear of other poor people and recognize that their interests are similar. You know, one of the things in rural areas that's at the root of much of the right-wing organizing and the moving into this rabid racist conservatism is the great economic decline of rural areas, the disinvestment, that feeling of being left alone in a very complex world. And particularly in Oregon, it seems to me, there's the question of what happened to our lumber industry and milling and jobs and even small farming, which is so many people have been driven off the land. They just really can't compete and sell their products and can't even get credit for the next crop cycle. How do you deal with that, especially the logging issue and the anger at environmentalism?
It is really trying to have conversations. Logging industry now is not anything like logging industry used to be years ago. You know, it's not the same manpower that goes into it. It's not as many jobs, but unfortunately, some of these logging companies are running all of this out of fear. And it is people's livelihood. You know, if you're a fisherman or you're a logger and you know yourself that your income has declined. So it is losing their way of living, and that is scary. And I don't know that there's a way to make them change their minds because it is affecting them directly. But overall, like, if folks are on board with, you know, jumping on that whole like timber unity or like, you know, that we need to bring logging back, a lot of those, they're not coming back. With global warming, things are changing and there's different industries that can thrive. And it's just having conversations with members of the community that, you know, what, you know, like, it doesn't have to get heated. I know that the media shows it that we're so divided and nobody talks to each other, but that's really not how it is living in a rural area. We all depend on each other. We go to city council meetings. I mean, even where I live, my neighbor across the street, I know he voted for Trump, but we're still out in the driveway talking to each other and the dogs are playing, and we have to figure out ways to still coexist because we depend on each other in rural communities. But it's through those just normal conversations, taking any opportunity you can, you know, like, I don't let things slide. You know, with my neighbor, if he's talking some nonsense about that January 6th didn't happen, I will say something, you know, not necessarily accusing, but just asking questions like, how did you find that information? Where did you hear that? And then maybe citing things like, oh, well, maybe you should look at this. And it's just in these normal conversations, you know, redirecting or helping educate wherever we can. People that are really extreme, I don't know that you can actually change their minds. And that's why we work with groups to make sure that they are voicing their concerns. For example, if your city council has a declaration that you don't agree with, or somebody says something racist, somebody in the group needs to say something. And we've seen that happening all over the state. We had it in Newburgh. It's been in the news lately about the school board there banned Black Lives Matter and Pride flags. So there are tons of community members there that are standing up and, you know, saying this is not a reflection of what we want in our community. So, you know, it might seem like the loudest voices are these extreme voices, but I don't believe they're the majority. Some people just might be fearful to speak up, but we, Rural Organizing Project, we just encourage our member groups and show them different avenues they have and ways to speak up and make sure that their voices are heard. And part of it is visibility, that other people in the community know, like, hey, there are other folks here that are not anti-vax and not anti-mask. You know, it's important to make sure that that visibility is there and that we're showing that, you know, that is not what all rural folks are about.
And let me add one reason that people can feel free to speak up is that they know there's a group in Oregon called the Rural Organizing Project that has their back. That is, they will support them if times get really bad and they're under attack. This is Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour on Cable Radio, talking to Monica Pearson of the Rural Organizing Project, helping to fortify the various groups and unify them. You're doing great work, Monica Pearson. Why don't you tell us how people can contribute and learn about you and contribute to your work?
The best way is to go to our website, which is www.rop.org. You can donate right from the homepage there. You can learn about our organization. There's a tab about our work, and you can see what member groups we have throughout the state, who is part of our network of human dignity groups around Oregon. You can also learn about our archive collection. We're in our 30th anniversary, and if you want to volunteer with us or donate money, you can do all of that and connect with us from our website on www.rop.org.
Monica Pearson, thanks for talking to us today. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.